You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Voters still love the idea of term limits. The idea of throw the rascals out after a few terms is supposed to end career politicians and instead give us a citizen legislator who is more connected with the people back home. A new book explains 13 years of research into how term limits have worked in Michigan. Its title is Implementing Term Limits: The Case of the Michigan Legislature. It was written by Marjorie Sarbaugh Thompson, and like Thompson, Marjorie joins us now. Let's look at some of the claims proponents of term limits made back in the day, starting with that idea that citizen legislators would be more interested in the common good than self-interest, as you wrote. What did your research show as Michigan transitioned to an all-term-limited lawmaker body?
One of the things that we found is that when people have a short time horizon and they don't have much experience, for one thing, they concentrate on things that they can fix easily and quickly. And for another thing, they have to try and figure out where to get information on how to do that. One of the main winners out of term limits has been lobbyists and special interest groups. One of the big losers that we discovered has been key local officials and also more experienced colleagues within the chamber. So even though voters were promised that term limits would sever the cozy ties between legislators and lobbyists, what we actually found is that legislators are more likely to turn to lobbyists for information.
I want to get into that a little further, but you talk about ambitious people. I mean, generally speaking, we like ambitious people. You don't want a bunch of slackers leading the state, right? But how does that change their priorities once they're in office?
What we discovered was that the biggest change in the people who are elected to office is that they are much more politically ambitious than they were prior to term limits. With really short limits, and Michigan has the shortest limits on its lower chamber of any state in the entire country. With really short limits, people come into office thinking about what they're going to do next. So they come into office with a plan for the next political position they're going to seek.
Right, because if they go into the House, at best they've got a 6-year tenure there and they're out.
Right.
Whereas before, you might go into the House of Representatives and say, this is where I belong and this is where I can serve the people best. At least that's the hope. And that's not an option any longer.
Right. No, it's not. And so people immediately are trying to jockey for position so that they have things they can run on for their next position, and they want to avoid anything that might be damaging to them when they run for the next position.
So they're not risk takers, and they want to make a big splash.
Absolutely. And they want to concentrate on things that are quick fixes, easy to do. Anything that's really tough, they can kick the can down the road and then the next batch of people have to cope with it.
It was argued that career politicians before term limits got too cozy with lobbyists. You just mentioned that might not be the case. Since term limits have been fully implemented, just how has that relationship between legislators and lobbyists and special interests changed?
Well, one of the things that we discovered is that interest groups are becoming more active in recruiting candidates to run for office. So people actually arrive in Lansing with cozy ties to special interests already established, because one of the big impediments to running for office is that it can be expensive, especially if it's a competitive race. Some of the costs of running for a state house seat, which doesn't, you know, it pays like around $70,000 a year, some of those elections can cost as much as $500,000. And so people don't want to run for those offices unless they're sure that they have some money behind them. So interest groups can offer them money and recruit them. And then when they arrive in Lansing, they already have that relationship.
So you're saying an environmental group or a business group might recruit before the parties would recruit them, just so they have a stake in the game?
Absolutely.
The book indicates change to term-limited legislators has also had an effect on the gender makeup of the legislature. In what way?
For one brief time period, there were only 4 Republican women in Lansing. Republican women were actually doing fairly well. There's a little bit more of a tilt toward women in the Democratic Party than in the Republican Party. at least prior to term limits. After term limits, Republican women really took it on the chin in Michigan. Democratic women have managed to kind of hold their own, but Republican women almost became an endangered species. And part of that is that they have been reluctant to run for office than they were prior to term limits.
Why?
I'm not sure why. I would want to ask them, but I suspect it may have something to do with the kinds of competition, who's recruiting, you know, what they see as their actual prospects of having a longer term impact.
With these citizen legislators who are supposed to have closer ties to the folks back home, you note that the voters actually have less influence rather than more influence on legislators voting. Why is that?
Well, one of the things that we found really startling was that there actually were more changes in the Senate than in the House in terms of information gathering. And in the Senate, prior to term limits, there were a lot of senators who said that when they had a problem and they wanted some information on how something would actually work, they were trying to make up their mind about how to vote on the floor on something, they would turn to key local officials. And some of the people, particularly Senate districts can be pretty large when we get to outstate areas and rural areas. Some of the people had as many as 35 school superintendents in their districts. The preterm limit senators were utterly amazing, as were the preterm limit House members, I would add. They could tell you the names of those superintendents, and they could tell you which one they would call on a particular type of issue that might affect school funding or school policies so that they could find out boots on the ground, what is this going to do in your rural school district? And that is, we think, a really big loss for voters because those are the folks who are close and in touch with them, those local officials.
So is this a matter of just not having time to build those relationships?
I would suspect so. I would also suspect that probably there's a different style of campaigning because there's a lot more money flooding in. But I think, you know, if you're only going to be there for a short amount of time, it's difficult to get around to all the school board meetings or all the community, you know, council meetings and really meet some of those people.
As the two of you wrote, access to elected officials matters in making policy. So I think I know the answer now based on what you said before, but who has better access to politicians now?
The lobbyists.
What about the bureaucrats? Because yes, the lobbyists have institutional knowledge as well, but the bureaucrats, the state agency heads and their staff have institutional knowledge. Has anything changed between preterm limits and post-term limits with the relationship to government agencies, directors, and staff?
Yes, that relationship has made some gains as well. And that may be somewhat reassuring if you're talking about the career civil servants, but state agency officials also include political appointees. And with term limits on the governor's office, you can end up with some fairly short-term people as directors of state agencies. And some of the time, it's not clear that those are merit-based positions as much as appointee patronage kinds of positions. So without going further in depth and figuring out whether it's the civil servants who are gaining more access or whether it's the political appointees, it's hard to know what really is happening there.
I guess the other thing, the legislature is supposed to be a watchdog over the agencies to make sure that they're doing things properly. If the legislators are more dependent on information from the agencies, that could be problematic as well.
One of the things we discovered when we were doing the term limits interviews is that a lot of state legislators do not realize that they have an oversight or monitoring role with respect to the state agencies. We had people who told us that we didn't understand the nature of government, that the state agency officials were accountable to the governor and that they had no authority to supervise them. Which, if you remember your introductory American government class, it applies at the state level as well, and they clearly are supposed to exercise oversight. So we learned to adopt sort of a poker face when we heard that.
The first time you had to be astonished, though, I assume.
Yeah, a little bit.
There's a lot more churn in membership in the legislature because of term limits, not the entrenched politicians that were a big concern to people who supported implementing term limits. But how do term limits affect actual competition for the seats? We've got people up for election, new people up for election more often, does that mean a lot more people, a lot better people have access or not?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that because you have to think back to the primary elections because so many seats are really heavily gerrymandered in Michigan. And in fact, we point out in the book that there is a district in which some of the Tigers baseball stars can hit a baseball further than that because the distance connecting the two chunks of the district is smaller than that between home plate and the outfield fence in Comerica
Park. Sure, the width of a street sometimes.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about winning that, whoever has the majority party label behind their name is almost the assured winner. Sometimes the November elections are more of a coronation than a competition. So a lot of the real competition happens in the primaries. And what we found was that there were fewer contested primaries in competitive districts after term limits. That is, people are being screened out so that you don't waste time and bloody your candidates in the primary. In the really safe districts that are a foregone conclusion which party is going to win, sometimes we found as many as 17 candidates running. So at that point, you've split the electorate and sliced and diced it so finely that a very, very small faction is choosing a candidate in a primary, sometimes by 100 votes or so, and then that person is really entering a coronation in November. So it's a lot more complicated than just saying, oh, we have more candidates. As you get rid of incumbents, there's more competition. You have new faces, but it's not clear that it's a competitive election.
Before term limits, some legislators nationally became experts in certain areas. I mean, they were around for a while. They might get to know the budget process really well, or they might be an expert on conservation or civil rights. Other members consulted them. They respected them. They listened to them. How does that work when often legislators are not in office long enough to become an expert in much of anything?
Well, it's much harder for people to figure out whose information they should rely on, who are the honest brokers. When we interviewed the pre-term limits legislators, they could tell you which colleague they would go to, and they would say, this is somebody who will tell me both sides and will say, for your district, you should probably vote this way, but I'm going to vote this way either because of my particular preferences or because of my district. And so you had a lot of people who had a reputation for being extremely knowledgeable and extremely honest brokers. That's what we call in the book informal influence. And in terms of the power dynamics, the influence dynamics within the chamber, informal influence goes way, way down after term limits. Your power comes from whatever position you hold. The leadership becomes much more powerful, but the people who were not in a formal position, but who just were knowledgeable, and particularly it was important that they were trustworthy, honest brokers, that has really shrunk a lot.
I'd kind of like you to summarize what you found in your study of Michigan term limits. I mean, telling us whether citizens of the state are now better served or not better served by term-limited legislators. I mean, I understand where the book landed, but I'd like you to give us a summary.
Well, I think one thing that might be helpful for people who are not political junkies like I am, a way to think about it would be to think about having grandparents or a really doting aunt or uncle come and take care of your kids for the weekend. And they let them eat pizza and they let them stay up late and they let them bend all sorts of different rules because they're not going to be there to deal with the consequences down the road. And then you as a parent come back and you have to kind of try and sort things out and you've got a little bit of a mess on your hand. The people who created the mess for you, even if they were well-meaning in doing it, have moved on. They're not there. And that's kind of how I feel the voters and the citizens of the state of Michigan have been left, because the time horizon is so short, there's no incentive to do anything that's really hard, that requires bipartisan compromise. You can just let things fester a little while longer and ease your way out of office and go on to your next gig. But then we as citizens are like the parents coming home, and we're still coping with the problems. We got cranky, unhappy, tired state government.
It's no wonder that voters get so frustrated with government when it functions like that, it seems like. Marjorie Sarbaugh Thompson and Lyke Thompson are professors of political science at Wayne State University. They wrote the book, Implementing Term Limits, The Case of the Michigan Legislature. Thanks for telling us about your research.
You're welcome.